Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Millennial in the Middle. I'm Connor DeLynn. Thanks for listening. I'm going to share with you an interview today that I just finished recording, and it was really, really an insightful conversation for me. I'm going to introduce you to a gentleman named Josh Barney. He has been really kind of a trailblazer in the technology field for a long time now, and has done it in lots of different areas. He was over technology and worked for the Department of Defense for a long time. He was with the Utah Jazz and was their director of technology in several different initiatives and things that they did for a little while, and has actually been very involved in the esports, electronic sports world, kind of virtual reality, video games, all those things that I know very little about, that he has really been a trailblazer and an industry leader there. And this whole conversation came about. We went to lunch to catch up, talk tech, talk business a little bit just a few days ago. And we ended up having kind of this philosophical conversation about the differences that have taken place in our mindset as it relates to how we connect with each other, as it relates to how we learn, how we look at the world, and how we really can see technology as being the driving factor behind so much of that. And, you know, it's interesting for me now. I would have never thought I would be in the tech industry. And here I am running a tech company, a startup. Like, I wouldn't have expected that. But as I've really advanced in my personal career, and as I have dived into generational theory and learning more about the differences, I find that technology can explain so much. And so this is what we're going to dive into today. And I think his perspective is very unique. And I'd also tell you, listen to this full interview all the way through, because maybe the last 10 minutes were my favorite part, when we kind of put our crystal ball hat on and how things might look different in the next 10 years, and not just how things looked different from 25 years ago. So Josh Barney, I hope you enjoy. Here it is. Josh Barney. Going from lunch to now having this conversation on the podcast just a day or so later. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Pleasure to join you here.
So let's start. We're going to dive into tech today. I want to talk about this, but let's personalize it first. So in your life, as a Gen Xer, you have experienced some massive changes in a very short amount of time that you've had to adopt to on the fly. So tell me, what was that experience like, and how did it affect your life's path?
Yeah, so when I was younger, my dad was an author and a historian. And so I remember actually getting our very first computer into the house probably when I was 8 years old.
Okay.
It was a TRS-80. It was a Radio Shack. It's, you know, lovingly known as the Trash 80 to the tech community and that. But that was the very first intro into that. And that would have been very early 80s. And then I remember in high school, you know, our keyboarding class is what it was called back then.
Yeah.
You didn't have, it was typewriters for a lot of it. And then it was computers in a portion of the class. So there was no internet. There was none of the stuff that you know, is commonplace today.
Sure.
Well, by the time...
Stop. So hold on. Just that you had a hybrid of, you were both on computers and typewriters at the same time.
Yeah, so half of the class would be on typewriters and half of the class would be on computers.
Like, if this computer thing doesn't work out, we know typewriters aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, they had their run, so. But yeah, so half of that class you spent with that. Well, by the time I hit 20, it was 95-ish, that's when the internet really became, you know, available to the populace. And I remember my dad had gotten a new computer, and it was a Packard Bell, and it had a modem in it. So all of a sudden you can dial up to the internet. Well, at the time that was just kind of like message boards. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't, you know, websites, you know, that you'd go peruse or whatever like that. So I remember that being kind of in that. Well, fast forward a couple years, 98, I got married by that time, and I was working at a place where one of my coworkers, his brother was in computers at that time. And so we started chit-chatting in that, and I was like, that's what I want. That's totally what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so got into school at the University of Utah in their computer science program, and quickly realized that the math was not going to be in my future. And I'm a much more hands-on individual. So I found that Weber State actually had a program that was more the hands-on networking type of stuff. So dealing with the hardware and all that other stuff. So after a year of being at the U, transferred over to Weber. And so this is like from 95 to 98, 99, this huge transition has gone in to where we're kind of in the infancy of all of this. And radical, like fast changing type of stuff, going from small internet to, by the time 98 was around and 99, I remember actually using Google when it was a beta search engine.
Wow.
And it was, yeah, it just kind of crazy when these things pop up and you're having these conversations with people talking about, I remember buying books off of Amazon when it was a bookstore, like crazy stuff. So
that's so interesting, especially to just see like in real time how, you know, slowly we started to introduce these things and then all of a sudden everything changed forever. And we all knew like there was no going back. And, you know, I always give some credit to Gen X because Gen X is kind of the middle child, often forgotten. They're this hard to identify generation. And I think it's because like you were raised one way and then all of a sudden, just like you show up at college and your first job and everything's different. There's an entirely new landscape. And I think it led to one of two things. People that either jumped in and said, let's figure it out. Like, let's problem solve. Let's see what this can do and embrace that opportunity. And then others that said, maybe I'm going to stick with the typewriter. This thing's just going to be a fad. And I think that's a different story. But tell me what sparked like your curiosity there of all of a sudden, like, hey, change is happening quickly. And I want to be involved with this and ride the wave.
Yeah, as I said, the thing that really got me into computers and all of that was kind of the problem-solving side of the world. That was what, for me, tech really kind of resonated with me in that. One of the very first jobs I had was working for Department of Defense. I was a contractor for the Air Force, and you had to figure things out. There wasn't a package, you know, product that you could go buy off the shelf for stuff. There obviously, you know, was from like your, at the time it was Corel Word Perfect and, you know, the infancy of Microsoft Word. But you had to figure things out for yourself. And so there was a lot of figuring things out after hours. There was a lot of trial and error in stuff. And that was what kind of motivated and drove me, because there's a passion that sits in figuring things out. Mm-hmm. And the clarity that you gain in seeing what worked, what didn't work, and then kind of the fulfillment of, hey, I just did something hard.
Yeah.
And then being able to see what you could do. So the big project that we had at the time was we were converting from a Windows NT domain to a Windows 2000 domain, which to most people that doesn't mean anything. But back in the day, you were taking an operating system that wasn't compatible with the new operating system and you had to transfer data across it. And so we actually, as a team, had gone in and we had a couple of guys that could develop. We created a software package that would take all of the computer or the information off of the old computer, upload it to our server, and then we would go to the new computer and it would download it and put it in place where it needed to be, even though the file structures were different or whatever. That was a lot of hard work at that time. And we got it done. We had to work through the night. It was multiple weekends that we ended up doing it. And where I was at up on base was on the flight line. So we were in the hangars with the F-16s and the C-130s and the A-1s. And so we had to work around the aircraft mechanics that were supporting, you know, trying to get the planes ready to support our nation in that. And so working in off hours and trying to do all those things, it was, there was some excitement and thrill that came with that. So,
That's cool to hear. And I, as you went through all that, like Top Gun just came out, right? So that's what's going through my mind. But right before I went and saw the new Top Gun movie, I watched the old one. And I mean, talk about just in front of your eyes in so many ways to see how far technology has come just in that little bit. It was cool to see that, you know, to think that Top Gun, when it originally came out, was the best tech you could find, like the coolest video that, or the coolest movie that just blew everyone's mind. And you watch that today and you're like, I can't even tell which planes are what. And I guess that is that just the same shot they used 12 times?
It's funny you bring that up because in the first one, when they go through and do their simulations, it uses the vector graphics. So it looks like old Asteroids or Tempest.
Yeah, like playing Galaga or something like that. Yeah.
And yet at that point in time, everybody's watching like, oh my gosh, I've never seen technology like this. This is amazing. And then when you see the new one and it shows the angles that they've got to go on and the trajectories, it's like, okay, yeah, that's what. But when the contrast and comparison between what the old and the new are, it's like, did a kid make this with crayons? Like, I can't believe that you guys had technology that looked that bad.
For sure. And that's what's so interesting. You experienced both of those. You know this. I don't know what it's like to work on a typewriter. Like, that is an antique. But to all of a sudden be like, hey, the same guy that in high school was being taught how to use a typewriter is now doing VR. And, like, some of the things that you do, it's just crazy to see how fast that happens in a span of time. And, you know, I would have never said growing up that technology was even like an interest to me. You know, I'm a speaker. I like stories. I read books and like history. That's what's interesting to me. And I think I always focus so much on events. But as I studied more and more about these differences of generations and how things have evolved, there was just this recurring theme that it was like technology is the difference maker here. And especially the technology that we enter the workforce with or that we have in our coming of age years, it changes the way we communicate, the way we think, the way we interact with each other. How have you seen in your life now, as you probably work with people that are older than you and probably a lot now that are younger than you coming right out of school, how do they look at tech differently and how do you think it affects their life?
So I'll start with the thing that's most kind of personal to me on that one. That's my kids.
Sure.
So I've got kids that range in age from 21 down to 14. And a few years ago, my daughters started to get really interested in things that I grew up with. And this is pre-Stranger Things. Like this is before the 80s had their resurgence on popular culture. So they wanted a Polaroid camera. And they were like, what is this, you know, medieval contraption that pops out a picture?
Yes.
And it was just completely like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's when I started to notice that a lot of the things that were important to kids and what they were becoming interested in were the things that I loved as a kid. All of the things that were big. The funny part is my oldest son at one point in time, he went with his friends to a thrift store and he came home with a typewriter. It was all of these, there was kind of this fascination with what that is. Well, fast forward a few years to where we're at now. I kind of sit in the middle, just like Gen Xers, I guess, do.
Yeah, but I kind of be Gen Xer in the middle. I'm millennial in the middle. You can't take that.
But I sit in the middle of these people. And a lot of the people that I interact with are my kids' age, my oldest son's age. And I call them friends. You know, it's not like, you know, I interact with them and, you know, tell them to get off my lawn when I'm done.
Sure.
Like these are people that I interact with on a day-to-day basis. I play video games with them, all that type of stuff. And so when we look at how kind of they see it, it's really interesting because there, I feel like there were times where they had no idea. There was no famine for them of technology. It was always a part of them. In 2008, you know, when the iPhone really kind of came, well, I guess it was 2007-ish, when the iPhone came into its own, that was, you know, for a majority of the people that I'm interacting with and talking about, that was when they were, you know, establishing their identity in the world. And so it's always been a part of their identity.
For sure.
And so for them, it's commonplace. And, you know, for most of the social media platforms, it's just the new iteration of what's always been there. For the people that I interact with that are older than myself, my dad uses the term Luddite all the time, which is somebody with an aversion to technology. And the thing that's funny is my dad spends a majority of his life on a computer because he writes all the time.
Yeah.
So I see that technology is used in two places with the younger generation and the older generation. They use it very differently.
Yeah.
I see my dad, like I said, he uses it all the time.
Yeah.
And in his breaks from writing, he's playing solitaire.
Yeah.
Or, you know, finding some other way to do that. So he's still there.
Yeah.
And then we obviously know with youth, with my kids, you know, everybody has those conversations around is too much tech bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's debatable arguments and all of those things. But the interesting part is it's a part of everybody's life. Mm-hmm. And how they use it is kind of what that ends up being for the betterment of society or for, you know, the detriment to society. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting for you to look at that of, okay, here's what I've experienced with people older than me that I've worked with or that I associate with, and then younger, and someone that social media or technology has just been commonplace for them. You are equals in the workplace, and you are expected to interact and work together. And there's, you know, you got to work maybe a little bit harder to have some understanding for effective and true connection to have, I think, between us with generation gaps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing that I think you said there that really caught my attention was how it's used by different people, technology, for different reasons. But we also see it being used across all sorts of different industries, right? And that's one of the reasons that I was intrigued to have you on the show is, you know, you've worked for the Department of Defense. Like, this is national security and figuring out, like, our military, how technology can help keep us safe. Then you've worked in the entertainment industry and for sports and now like in video gaming. And so it's interesting. It's like the same thing that you're doing, but used in so many different avenues. Did you expect that to be your career?
Absolutely no. The funny part was, is when I was growing up, my mom had a job where, and this will give Gen Xers their flashbacks as well, maybe some PTSD, but, you used to have to go to your like local grocery store to rent your movies and video games.
Sure.
Hollywood Video, yeah. Blockbuster Video.
I do remember Blockbuster as a little kid. Like I remember going there, picking it out, but then it was gone by the time like I would drive there on my own.
And this is pre that.
Yes.
So we're now, it's just after the Jurassic period and now we're in the modern age. But my mom was the middleman. So they would send her the movies and the video games to the house. And so that meant I got to play everything before. So I got introduced to video games. This would have been 1985-ish when the Nintendo system came out. And so at an early age, I kind of got exposed to what that was. And I remember telling my parents in my teenagers, yeah, I want to play video games for a living. And they were like, yeah, that's not a thing. Well, move into, you know, my not so recent past here, but in 2016 I'm working for the Utah Jazz. I spent 12 years there.
Okay.
I was there on under a tech kind of thing. I was at the time I was the director of technology over the arena and their practice facility, and we were gearing up for the renovation of the arena that we did in 2017. And at the time, we had Gordon Hayward on the team, who was a big video gamer. And I obviously knew that. And some of the executives on the team knew that that was kind of his thing as well. And that was where I brought up. I was like, why don't we get into video games? And they're like, what are you talking about? We're a basketball team. And it's like, well, you've got players that's what they do the moment they're out of this building. Why not look into esports? So we wandered down that path and went through a period of instruction and learning to say, what is esports? What does this mean for us as an organization? And that technology piece there came out of nowhere type of thing where it, you know, and esports has been around since, you know, late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's established. It was always something, but it was one of those things from a technology standpoint that we were introducing something into an ecosystem that hadn't existed there before. On that same kind of thought process, you jump over into the actual business of basketball there. And at some point in time, and it wasn't really well received within the organization, but I always said that we're a tech company that just happened to play basketball because every piece of the business was technology driven outside of dribbling the basketball. Hmm. To get into the building, you had to have a ticket. Well, we moved to where it was a digital ticket. to purchase your concessions? Well, it was an app.
Yeah.
And it was a cardless payment. And it was like all of these touch points that you had with that interaction were all technology based. The digital signage, the Wi-Fi in the building, the LED boards inside of the bowl, everything kind of had a technology piece to it. And then previous to that, I worked for the state of Nevada, where I was in higher education there. And it was going through, and so this would have been in the mid-2000s. We were trying to expand out to make it so that rural Nevada had the same access that Las Vegas or that Reno had from even an elementary standpoint. We're talking about mid-2000s, which by that point in time, to us, internet and interactivity was a commodity. So seeing how all of these things where technology didn't exist and what those have done to kind of change where I've been and how I've seen the world and stuff like that, every kind of piece of my career has had kind of its own like a little encapsulation where there was a moment where, and I don't want to use the word innovation because that's not what it means, but there was kind of an innovation that happened that something had to change in the product that was offered to make it so that overall the experience was better, that there was more learning, that there was all of these things that came along, and it centered around technology and how that changed what was going on in the business. So
that's such an interesting answer because, you know, when people ask me, oh, what do you do, Connor? I'm like, well, I'm in tech. I run a tech company. I'm a founder of, you know, right here in Silicon Slopes. And I would have never expected that. I'm as far from a technology person as it comes. I've never played video games in my life. Like, I'm just not that way. But what you just said there all of a sudden clicked for me of like, okay, if the Utah Jazz in reality are a tech company because that's everything they provide other than, you know, the sport that happens on the floor, it all of a sudden makes it think like you could say that for just about any career now or any business or idea. Like if you really want to take it to the masses now, it doesn't even really make sense to say like I'm in the tech industry, because would you argue that we're all in the tech industry?
I would totally agree with that. I mean, when you look at frictionless interactions in business now, the more friction you have in a business, it tends to be that there's either a copious amount of tech that's making it too difficult or not enough tech that's making it too difficult to work with. I don't carry cash with me anymore at all.
Yeah.
And I would probably say that there's a majority of the population that's like that.
I don't. Yeah.
Well, that now becomes, I mean, that's the opposite of, you know, it's the analog interaction that we had there. If you have cash, you know, during COVID, that became the norm that you didn't want to interact using cash, the old fashioned way of doing those things.
Yeah.
Every business had to go through and figure out what that was, whether it was putting in a temperature sensor, you know, for people walking into their establishment or whatever that was. Technology was brought in to make the business function and make it easier to interact there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree with you. Every business kind of is a technology business now, because there has to be that interaction for that to happen, because it's a global business now. Like, you can have people operating with you from all over the, it was interesting while I was at the Jazz, we had a little map up on one of the TVs from our social media followings. And so the biggest spot outside of the US for following was the Philippines, little teeny island over in Pacific, like massive following. They're a huge basketball nation.
Huh.
Well, how do they follow us other than it's through technology? Like, yeah, it's social media that ends up tying all that together. And it's the same for all the businesses. There's a reason why influencers have global followings, and it's because of the tech.
Yeah. I love that you point that out, because I talk about this for individuals all the time that have a passion or have something that they're good at, where, you know, before it would have been hard to have a global reach, or impossible to have a global reach for the masses, where now a someone in the Philippines can feel like they are a Utah Jazz fan, right? Or someone in the Philippines could jump on a Zoom call with you to get your advice on tech or to talk through something. Like, that would have never even been an option. And I think it all of a sudden broadens our horizons. So each of us as individuals have more opportunity than ever before to be able to connect, to reach different people and provide experiences that before would have maybe never even been dreamed of. Have you seen that be the case?
Yeah, absolutely. The other part too in that, my dad uses a phrase more from kind of an ancestry standpoint of seeing how we are connected to people. And he uses the word connections a lot. And that honestly ends up being what it is. You know, anxiety, depression, all those things that we have. I'm one of those individuals. And in those moments of when I'm down and you feel like you're the only one who's experiencing that, well, this is actually one of those things as well now with the global expanse of what we've been seeing and how we interact with each other. We actually recognize that everybody goes through those things, and we actually get a glimpse into other people's lives, and we can see that that connection takes place and recognize, hey, you know what? I'm not the only one that has to deal with this.
Yeah.
And so the connection that takes place when we talk, it's if it's a basketball, if it's, you know, I love European football. If it's one of those things, your fandom or your hobby or whatever, it's not, you know, controlled by land or water or even by air. Like, it can exist wherever because of what that is. So finding people with common interests, goals, whatever type of thing is that much more easy now. And it's all driven by that, which means from an influencer standpoint, from doing business, you know, whatever your business may be. This actually just popped into my head. There was a movie when I was growing up called Singles that was about the grunge rock scene.
Okay.
And so this is pre-internet, you know, in there as well. But they were talking about an album that they had, and they said, we're huge in Belgium. And it was one of those kind of funny moments where, you know, their globalization came at a time where there was not globalization.
Yeah.
And that's what it is now. So you can, you know, be a music, you know, an artist that creates music, whatever, here, and have a huge following in another place. And SoundCloud is the medium where that can take place now. Like, all of these things make the world a lot smaller.
Yeah. Man, I love this podcast because I love having people with different perspectives and backgrounds. And all of a sudden, I find these just recurring themes over and over. And I mean, I started this show over 2 years ago trying to help people connect and develop empathy for each other and have real conversations with someone that might look different from us or have a different experience or be from a different place. And all of a sudden, we look at it in this lens and we have the opportunity to connect, like you said, with more people ever before because of technology. And I think as you said earlier in the show, that you saw technology as a way to be a problem solver, right? And I know that there's a higher cause behind that as well. How, I mean, to get maybe a little more philosophical or deeper here, like, what is it that truly makes that passion around coming up with solutions? And how have you seen that in your life?
The problem solving piece for me is, you know, that's always kind of been what's motivated me. And one of the things that I see with technology is there is an inherent nature of it to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
We can go through, I mean, obviously when you look at the onset of electrical cars, when you look at green technologies that come in, I used the word technology to describe green technology because that's what it is. But all those things have the opportunity to help make the world a better place. From that same standpoint too, social media has the ability to go through and make the world a better place. All of the things that we go in and do from a technology standpoint can make it so that our own personal lives, our work life balance can be made better, to where, you know, it used to be that you would have to go and grind out 60-hour work weeks to make it so that you could pay your rent, you could put some food on the table and make a life for your family. Mm-hmm. Well, when we work smarter and we use the technology to help us get to that point, we make it to where we have the opportunity to have more personal time and enjoy our lives a little bit more. From the philosophical standpoint of what technology can do, though, I'll bring up an instance when I was with the Jazz. We were in the middle of the renovation of the arena in 2017, and I was looking at opportunities that we would have in that space to differentiate how we did business from a technology standpoint. And one of those things was we were sitting in a meeting, and I had seen a couple of things on the internet over the previous weeks or so, and it was really kind of stuck in my head on what that was. I had seen a gentleman who had attended a football game with the Indianapolis Colts, and he was wearing these set of glasses that were opaque, and they had a little camera in the front of them. And it was quite interesting to me because they were making it so he could see. So he was able to actually see out of these. They projected. They had two little...
Because he was blind? Or?
Because he was blind. Okay. Yeah, I guess I should say that. But they had these two little screens that were over his eyes that made it so he could watch this football game for the first time. And I was like, what a neat thing.
Wow.
This is something that, you know, technology has made this individual's life better.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, I want to do that. And so I made kind of this appeal in one of our weekly renovation meetings to the executive team. I said, this is something I'd like to do. I'd like to see if we could go through and procure one of these sets and invite an individual to a game and see what we can do to kind of go through, test this out, see if this is something we want to add to one of the offerings that we have here. And they were like, yeah, this is a great idea. So it just happened to be that one of the guys that was sitting at the table as well was the head of marketing at the arena at the time. And he said, you know what, we actually had somebody about 6 months ago ask this question. And they live just down in Utah County.
And they said, I have a blind child, or what was it?
Yeah, they said that they had a son who has a condition called aniridia, which means that it's basically all pupil on his eye and no iris. So it can't expand and contract, which means he has no kind of field of vision on that. And it's about an inch in front of his face that makes it so where he can actually, you know, see some things. So we reached out to him and said, would you be interested in coming in? And I brought in the company, which their name is eSight. We brought them in. He was fitted for glasses. It was a playoff game, which was kind of cool. So we started talking with him, and it was kind of fun to watch this kid transform in those couple of moments once the glasses were fitted on, to see his head kind of spin around and start looking, because he was actually seeing the world for the first time.
Wow.
Which is really cool.
Gave me the chills.
Yeah. And so we ended up wandering from kind of the back office areas out into the court, and we took him down so that he could watch the shoot around for the Jazz. So he's sitting there and watching all of this going on, and like, oh yeah, he just made a shot, and just kind of seeing that childlike excitement that went along with it. Well, one of the players that was sitting on the ground noticed this kid that was sitting there that was interacting with his dad and one of the representatives from eSight.
Let's say who he is, because we all love him.
Yeah, his name's Joe Ingles.
Joe Ingles, what a stud. We miss that guy.
Legitimately one of my favorite human beings. So Joe noticed this kid sitting there and started to ask the question of what is he and what's he doing type of thing. And so then they took the kid out, introduced him to some of the players and that, and Joe was one of the players that wanted to meet him. Well, once Joe understood what his condition was, he was like, oh, I want to buy those glasses for him. Well, they were $10,000, you know. So for the average family, that's, you know, that's a huge expense. So having Joe do something like that was actually really cool. But the why behind all of that was that there was an experience that was made for this kid who had never watched it, never seen anything in public type of thing like that before. Like, we take for granted going to a movie and watching it in a movie theater. We, you know, going to the opera, going to a play, you know, on Broadway, all of those things. This kid had never experienced that stuff before. And the technology is what went in and changed that. And that became, it was to this moment, it's still one of my favorite times. I'm going to get emotional.
It's neat.
One of the favorite times I had there. I made a difference. Yeah, that's what technology can do.
Yeah.
If we go in and use things for the right reason, we can make the difference for a lot of people in a lot of places. And we're starting to see some of that stuff within, you know, when I was growing up, people who were hearing impaired, you didn't have much options other than big clunking hearing aids and that. Yeah. And then even for people who, you know, lost their hearing later in life, you know, they didn't really want to go to that. Well, cochlear implants and all these other new technologies that have come out that, have made these people's lives better. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I love that. You sharing that story, you shared this with me at lunch the other day, and it's the main reason I wanted to have you here, because I think it's so easy to get lost in the minutia and the details, and especially something like technology or development. You're like, oh, this is, I don't get it. But it starts around people, right? The moment all of a sudden you can see that being enjoyed or experienced by someone in a way that maybe they haven't before, and you can see that change of life, all of a sudden it immediately changes your why behind everything you do. And, you know, I think is if we all think of ourselves as, you know, whatever we do, maybe we're a technology company or we're in the technology industry, but then let's hope that what your business does is something that is making a difference and is starting with people in mind and people that have problems and people that are trying to find solutions. And how can we help deliver that in a way that, like you said, makes the world a better place? And I know that's cliche, but that those experiences of real people being able to feel and be involved in something like that, it's really neat.
Well, and it's technology leaders as well. It's one of the things that we need to be even more careful with now is we understand that bringing guests into our buildings or bringing clients into our business or how people interact with us is important. But at the same time, too, the employee piece of that is a huge piece. And we obviously saw in COVID as well what ended up happening with technology in that world. We went to a space where we were sitting in cubicles or in offices or in buildings together, and then all of a sudden we weren't. And the Band-Aid that we were using was Zoom. Mm-hmm. Well, that Band-Aid didn't work great. It was a Band-Aid. It worked good for kind of the situation we were in because we weren't really prepared for that. But at the end of the day, then the connection came in that once we kind of moved out of that world, we had to get back together again. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard for businesses to understand how the world has changed. And as tech leaders, how we operated a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago,
yeah,
it may not work today anymore. And how we go in and look at how our businesses are run or how we interact with our clients or our guests in our building, we have to have a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. And that's the technology piece, because as much as we want to drive user experience, we want to drive our employee experience. We want to make people want to be there. We talked at lunch about the Great Resignation and what that meant. And that's exactly what this is as well, is the world changed and some companies have been able to catch up. Some were actually prepared better pre-COVID and have weathered the storm a little bit better. There's some that are playing catch up too.
Yeah.
Technology can play a piece in those to drive that. It doesn't always have to be a ping pong table, you know, in your office. It doesn't have to be, you know, a catered lunch or whatever. But something has to be done now, and it's going to be unique to each business and what their culture is or lack of culture to make that change. But that actually could be something that is driven in that.
Yeah, it's so well put. And I can't help but listen to that and think about my experience. And, you know, we asked all the time, you know, currently starting Opt, we're about ready to launch. Like, that seems like a pretty simple idea. How come no one's thought of that before? And frankly, we asked ourselves that same question. Like, is this out there? Has this been done before? And then we realized, well, no, because it's all about timing. Like, what made this possible in the first place is people being okay with virtual meetings, with this idea that I'm okay turning my camera on in my house and talking to someone. And I mean, the number of Zoom meetings we have now compared to what we had 3 years ago, totally different. I mean, it changed this podcast. All of a sudden, I was reaching out to guests that I wouldn't have reached out to before. Why? Because we were used to it. And all of a sudden, then seeing that created such a mindset shift, a paradigm shift, like you said, of people going, well, maybe there's a better way. Maybe I don't just have to trade dollars for hours. Maybe I don't need to make it feel like my organization or the company that I work for owns me and owns my time. And all of a sudden now, it's almost like you can just feel this movement, this excitement, this passion, and good leaders, like you said, that'll step in and support that and get behind it and help empower people to take advantage of this new way of thinking and this new paradigm. I really feel those are going to be the ones that win today.
Agreed. Totally agree.
Yeah. I really have enjoyed this conversation. I think to see kind of this come full circle, and you have a really unique experience in the variety of things that you have done. I want to ask you this question, and maybe now we'll put on like our crystal ball mindset or go a little psychic. Like, okay, we've talked about what's happened in the last 25-ish years. What do you think the next, let's just say 10 years, might look like? And I know it's the biggest question ever, but wherever you wanted to take that, what changes do you see on the horizon?
Well, I just watched Back to the Future 2 with my kids the other day.
That's the one where they go to the future.
Yeah, they go to the future, and we're already past that future. So
we don't have the skateboard, though.
Yeah, I can't prognosticate there, but honestly, I'm going to bounce over into my esports side of the world as well, because when I was doing that more heavily than I am right now, that was always the question, is what does that look like in the next 6 months? Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know. Like, because we can expect that there is going to be some sort of thing that continues to move along regardless. It'll just have its continuum that can keep moving on. Nothing will probably really divert it from its path, but there's going to be some things that go in and really shake stuff up. We saw that obviously with the electrical car stuff. I remember talk of it when I was a kid that, electrical cars were coming out, but with whatever their technical, capacity was back then, it was, driving the length of your driveway was the, electric car. But in the next 10 years, I don't even really know what we're going to see, but I know that we're going to see some changes in stuff, in how we interact with each other, just because of the current political climate, in how kind of the world is a little unsettled in things. I feel like we're going to see some dynamic changes in things where people won't put up for how the world is. Hmm. And I know that there are innovative people out there enough that we will see technology pushing those things.
Yeah.
And what that is, honestly, like when you talk about some of these companies that are meaningful to us today, some of them weren't even around 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's really hard to go in and put a number on what that is now, on what that could end up being. But I feel like there's going to be a dynamic change in how we interact with each other. I feel one of the things that I love about the Gen Z and the millennials in how they interact is that they do see the world as more of their home versus just a country, which means we have to interact more with the world around us, because there is a symbiotic relationship between us and Europe and us and Asia, and what affects them affects us now, and vice versa. And so we will move to this perspective where how we conduct ourselves can't just be because it only affects my backyard. And it's got to be in a technology space that makes it where it's a global kind of reach that way. No idea what that's going to be. That's just kind of my feeling on where it's going to go.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic answer, because, we would just be making guesses to try and speculate what the technologies will be or what innovation it will be that will catch on. But I think you hit at the core that there's a change of mindset, right? And you said it really well. You said of people looking and saying, that's not working anymore. I don't choose that path. I think what we've considered maybe is the American dream, like Gen Z and millennials look at it differently. How we define success, how we define happiness and fulfillment and enjoying each other and true connection, there's a whole new playbook. And so I think we do know that that playbook's changing. There are a lot of people that are saying no thanks to the old ways and looking forward. And now the options and the potential is limitless. And who knows where it might take us. I'm excited to watch and try and understand it along the way. And people like you and me that are tech leaders trying to adapt, trying to provide solutions with people in mind to say, how can we help empower people to find that happiness with this paradigm shift or whatever it might be? That's my goal. And I think that's why the two of us get along so well, is we both see a bigger picture here that I think it's really cool to be a part of and be surrounded by people who are a part of it.
Amen. Agree.
Yeah. Anything you want to add in closing here, Josh?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity to come here with you.
Yeah. Well, keep in touch. Follow. I know you've got some really cool things in the pipe. Some of them, like, we can't even really announce right now because there are some deals being worked. But I will just say this, Josh, I know you are going to be at the forefront of education in technology and now kind of almost passing this baton in leading the way. You've been a trailblazer for 25 years, right? But now being in a position to help the globe. Like I know you've talked about some conferences that aren't even going to be here in the US. Like, I love that thought. And so I'm excited to follow along. I'll make sure our listeners do the same. Thanks so much for your time and your insights that you've shared today. And, I told you, I end every show with a song. You're more than welcome to join me. Clowns to the left me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time, everybody.